Okay, our next case is State versus Santos Romero. Council may approach. Good afternoon. You may take that off, yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim McGow. Myself, along with attorney Mark Foxel, represent the appellant, Mr. Santos Romero, in this appeal. This appeal presents two important questions for the court to address. One is whether or not the court, a district court, a trial court, can avoid a jury sequestration requirement under the statute by modifying jury instructions and separating them into 2 days. And two, whether the current practice that courts all across the state use under State versus Trammell denies a defendant constitutional rights to a fair trial and to confrontation. On the first issue, under the statute 292016, the court, after the submission of the case, after arguments, the court is supposed to, quote, immediately charge the jury. So the closing arguments occurred at approximately 2:30 on October the 20th of 2021. And it wasn't until 3:44 that the court then released the jury. And the court indicated that when it released the jury, it was going to read instructions 1 through 14 and save instruction number 15 for the following day. And instruction number 15 is the instruction that says the case is now submitted for your review. You have until X amount of time to deliberate, pick a juror, all of the final closing instructions that are part of that last instruction.
Was there any objection voiced to the court using that procedure?
Not specifically at the time. No, there was not. There was an objection that was voiced on October the 2nd when the parties appeared for a pretrial conference and when the district court asked the defendant whether or not he was going to request sequestration, and they said clearly and unequivocally yes. And the court said, okay, I'll notify the clerk. Subsequent order on October 8th, sua sponte, no real opportunity to object to that, no hearing that was issued by the court, and then the jury instructions came after. It's our position that once a defendant has invoked that right, well, really, that right is automatic. I think Collins, State versus Collins, says you don't have to specifically waive it on the record, but the right is automatic. Silence could denote consent to not sequestering them, but here we don't have that. Here we have the exact opposite of that. Here,
but don't we have an issue where he failed to meet the deadline by which he needed to indicate to the court he wanted the jury sequestered?
Failed to meet the deadline, no question about that. The issue then becomes whether or not the court can place, a trial court can place additional parameters on top of a right that is really automatic under the statute. Statute says the jury shall be sequestered. And what the district court attempted to do here is to set an artificial deadline to say, if you don't invoke that right, a right that's automatic, if you don't invoke that right by a certain date, then I'm going to deem that it's been waived. However, as I've already indicated, on October the 2nd, when the parties were specifically asked, they indicate, no, we want them sequestered. So we don't believe that there's any constitutional validity, that there's any enforceability of the court's order to invoke the right at a certain time when none of the cases, none of the case law requires that kind of action. So when the court, it's our position that the court had a duty to formally charge the jury by reading all of the instructions 1 through 15 at the time after the case had been submitted or after the arguments had been concluded.
Where does it say that he has to do that?
292016.
But he has to do it all at the same time and from start to finish.
Well, that no, not that specifically, Your Honor. It doesn't say that. What that statute does say is that after the argument is concluded, the court shall immediately before proceeding with any other business. Okay. And then that statute further talks about how the instructions are not to be modified in any way, that they're all supposed to be given. So it's our position that when the court then separates, you've got a set of jury instructions. And when the court separates them into two different days, that is a clear attempt, we believe, a clear attempt to avoid sequestration by sending them home at 3:44 instead of reading that final instruction.
Couldn't the judge, after closing arguments, simply have said, we will resume the proceeding in the morning, at which time I will read the jury instructions, and had just done them all the next day? I don't see anything in the statute that would preclude that, because they can't do any other business, right? They have to immediately.
I guess I can answer that question, Your Honor, in two different ways. One is, it would depend upon the time. I think then you're getting into a fact specific. Could the court do that at 9 o'clock in the morning?
But isn't the judge, don't they have discretion in how they're going to run their proceedings? I mean, if
certainly.
So you're saying that if it would have been 4 o'clock or 4:30 and the closing arguments were done, then you and the judge said, okay, we're going to wait till tomorrow and we'll read the instructions and submit it to the jury, then this would not be an issue for you. Your problem's that the court split the instructions.
My problem is really both. My problem is that the court split the instructions, number one, and that the court did not comply with the letter, how we read the letter of 2016, by indicating that immediately after the instructions, the jury should be charged. So to answer the other part of your question, I guess it would depend upon how this court would interpret before proceeding with other business. Really, once the jury has received the evidence, they don't have any other business to do other than be instructed by the court and then go and deliberate. So we interpret the before proceeding with other business to refer to the court. Before the court proceeds with any other business, it's supposed to immediately instruct the jury. And when you send them home early, then an argument could be made that the court is proceeding with other business other than charging the jury as specifically indicated under that statute.
What if the judge had to be somewhere at, 3:45?
Yeah, no, certainly that certainly would be an issue, but we don't have that kind of record in this case. I mean, this case there, I think the court just indicates one statement about in order to accommodate your time or something along those lines before the jury is instructed at all.
But before we eat up all your time here, I would appreciate some discussion on the Trammell issue.
Yeah, so here's the problem with Trammell. I think Trammell is okay in practice, but or okay in theory, but there's a problem in the way it's been implemented and a problem in the practice. Okay, and here's what I mean. Under Trammell, if somebody makes the initial showing that there could be some impeachment or some relevant evidence in counseling records or therapy records or what have you, then the state is supposed to get the consent, the records get subpoenaed, sent to the court for an in-camera review, and the court then makes a determination of what records the court determines are, quote, relevant. And then a second release and then issues things out if the court finds that appropriate. The problem is there's never a record of that. There's never a record of what the court receives, number one. There's never a record of what analysis the court makes in determining what is relevant to the court.
But could you have requested a listing of the documents submitted to the court as a starting point?
I don't know that there's any statutory or case authority for that.
Is there anything that says you couldn't?
No. No, certainly that can be done. But in practice, there's no record of what the court gets. There's no record of the analysis that the court uses. And there's no records then for you or any court to review to say, I don't know how you say that that's not relevant. The issue really with Trammell is not an admissibility question, it's a discovery question. And it's our position that the defendant should be entitled to all of those records independently, with no in-camera review, with no independent discretion of what is or isn't relevant to the defendant's case. Judge can't make that determination without knowing what the facts of the case are, which is presented at the trial. So you give the defendant all of those records, and then we argue down the road, either by and through a protective order or a motion in limine, either filed by the defendant for the admission of records or filed by the state for the exclusion of records. But you argue about the admissibility of that down the road. But for purposes of preserving the right to a trial, for purposes of preserving the right to prepare a defense and present a defense, it is essential that in situations where somebody in a deposition or in some other report indicates either they've got some mental condition or they're on some medication or they've seen some counselor where they've specifically talked about this particular event, it is relevant and necessary for a defendant to have those records to compare and contrast what are the differences in the statements that have been made, what are the medications that could affect ability to perceive or ability to be honest. What are the psychological or other emotional problems that could have a factor here or be irrelevant here? And then it's up for the court to determine down the road whether any of that is admissible.
So it isn't so, your complaint isn't so much the process that was used here doesn't allow us to review. Your problem is with the actual even provide having to provide the court an in-camera review of these documents. Your position is
both.
The court shouldn't have to, they shouldn't go to the court. They should just go to defense counsel instead.
Yes. That's part of my problem or part of my issue, I guess. They should go. And then anytime the defense gets them, then the order says whatever the defense gets, give to the state. I mean, so that both parties have all those records. That's part of the problem. But the other part of the problem is, if this court determines that the Trammell situation as it existed in 1989 or declared by the court in 1989 is appropriate, then it begs the it creates the problem of, well, how do we ever review that? How do we ever determine objectively that defendant was denied some relevant records? I mean, maybe in a motion for new trial, but if the court's making that sole determination and we're not offering that stuff on in the record that anybody can look at later, it creates a problem for appellate review, which is really the antithesis of the whole process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm tempted to ask you how far we took him over to give it to Mr. Ralph, but I'll be amazed if Mr. Ralph thinks he needs it. So
I think that's a compliment, so I'll take it.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Two primary issues on appeal. One, the jury sequestration issue as well. Second, the Trammell issue. As set forth in my brief, and as I will detail here shortly, we see no reversible error here. The sequestration issue, we think the district court complied with the relevant law. And the Trammell issue, we don't think is properly before this court.
On the first issue, is it a problem that there wasn't an objection made at the time the court announced how it intended to proceed?
Well, it's a problem for the defendant, not for us. I think that's a ground for finding waiver here. There's no objection made. I think Collins, while explicitly overruling Robbins' requirement of an express agreement, also cites a litany of cases and circumstances where a failure to object is a waiver. And so the holding really there is, yeah, the district court, it's your duty to, sequester the jury, but a failure to object to how it goes is a waiver. And that's what we had here. I think the additional ground for waiver is the district court's order. There's nothing novel or strange or untoward about a district court setting a progression or scheduling order. They were required to give a notice of intent to sequester 2 weeks before trial. They didn't. A waiver was deemed to have happened. And I don't think it's strange again for that requirement to be there because sequestering a jury is a logistical hurdle. You got to get hotel rooms. You got to get food. You have to have them arrange for, daycare or childcare, what have you. So that 2 week requirement makes perfect sense. He did not follow it, and the district court correctly, I think, deemed it to be waived on that ground as well.
Can you address the applicability of 2016?
Well, yeah. Yes. So 2016, I think it's right in the title of the statute. It's just the order of procedure for a criminal trial. It sets out, openings, presentation of evidence, the order in which, prosecution, followed by defense, followed by rebuttal, and closing arguments and charging the jury.
Immediately.
Yes. But I don't think that changes the inherent authority or discretion of the court to conduct trial proceedings, which the Nebraska Supreme Court has routinely recognized for decades. It would not have, as Your Honor pointed out, been improper to recess at 4:30 to start again the next day. Or what if we're in the middle of instructions or closing arguments go long at lunch? We can't have a recess for lunch for the jury, or say a jury has a medical issue in the middle of closing arguments or instructions. We can't have a recess to address that. That would be an absurd reading of that statute, particularly where it purports to only set forth the order of procedure. Additionally, I think, again, he didn't object, which is traditionally a waiver of any sort of purported error below. Additionally, I think one of the arguments he made was that the split instructions, that there was language in there about not being qualified, modified, or in any manner explained to the jury. I think that's, when you look at the actual language of the statute, 2016, it's talking about a written instruction shall not then be orally qualified. So as written, they are given to the jury. That's what it's talking about. Not that you can't split instructions or, you know, read some and not the others and push it to the next day, which again, the district court, basically kind of a common sense type thing, is telling the jury, hey, I'm not going to submit the case to you until 9 a.m. the next morning, because I understand that you have to make arrangements. You have to plan. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to do closing arguments. If we have enough time, I'll instruct you somewhat, and then we'll, you know, push it to the next day. So it's not like anybody had an issue. It's a pretty straightforward reason, justifiable reason for doing so. And so, like I said, I don't think that we ever even violated 29-2022. And in any event, if this court were to disagree, I think the waiver is correct on both the grounds I discussed before. Moving to the Trammell issue, I really just don't see how this court has anything to review or how it's properly before this court. There was no mention in the trial proceedings at all whatsoever about a Trammell issue. There was no objection made to the witness's testimony. So it's not properly preserved for appellate review. Additionally, there was no, it was not included in the bill of exceptions, the Trammell hearing. There's no record of it made. The records themselves, the privileged therapy records that are at issue, are not before this court. And as I pointed out in my brief, and there are other additional cases as well, there has in the past been cases where the trial judge has sealed the exhibits and the appellate court had them for review, and so that they could assess the district court's decision. And that wasn't done here. So it's the appellant's burden to make the record. They didn't do it. I think that's another ground to find this assigned error to be without merit. And finally, the third point would be, it's a Nebraska Supreme Court rule. It's been established since, I think it was the 1989. I don't know that this court would have any authority to overturn that. And they assessed the confrontation right, the right to fair trial, in that decision. That was part of the reason for the procedure that they decided to implement. So for those reasons, we don't think that there's anything really for this court to address on that issue. As far as the ineffective assistance of counsel claims, I'll submit those on the record unless this court has questions, or on my brief, unless this court has questions.
Would you agree that the Trammell procedure as set out in the case doesn't specifically provide for a further method? I mean, it doesn't say, and there should, like in privileged documents where a privilege log is required, and then the documents are submitted in camera to the judge, and he takes a look at them and decides which of those privilege logs get produced and which get withheld. Trammell doesn't provide for that type of thing. It just says they go to the judge decides what's relevant and orders the relevant documents to be released. That doesn't really provide for a review of anything, does it?
Well, I mean, the Trammell court and the procedure outline did not get into, I guess, that level of detail, but it's certainly capable. Trial attorneys, trial judges understand how to present an appellate record. I cited one of those cases in my brief. There's probably 4 or 5 that I found where they sealed the records for appellate review. So while Trammell might not have specifically outlined how you do it, the trial judges and trial attorneys can make it work, and they have made it work in the past. So I don't think that that is a reason to, I guess, find error here, or even if, yeah, I guess that'd be my answer there. Unless this court has further questions, we ask that you affirm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. We appreciate your time. We will take the matter under advisement and we are adjourned for the day.